क्वेश्चन फ्रॉम अमल महाप्रभु प्रभु, हाउ कैन स्थितिधीर मुनि रेफर टू ज्ञानी एंड योगी ऑल्सो, बिकॉज अल्टीमेटली एज गिवन इन 2.16, दीज पीपल कैन नॉट हैव कंट्रोल ओवर द सेंसेस एंड फॉल डाउन बिकॉज ऑफ लैक ऑफ कृष्ण कॉन्शियस टेस्ट. सो इज स्थिति मुनि रेफरिंग ओनली टू प्रैक्टिसिंग स्टेज एंड नॉट टू परफेक्शन स्टेज? इन 2.60 कैन यू प्लीज एक्सप्लेन वॉट इज परम दृष्टवा फॉर अ ज्ञानी, विच हायर टेस्ट इज ई गेटिंग? Is it the same as the Tushtaha of 2.555? These are technical questions. And if we want to study the Bhagavad Gita at such a technical level, we need to understand two things. First is that Srila Prabhupada's purports generally give us a devotional understanding so that as devotees we can apply the principles in our lives, and the most effective way for us to apply these principles is by the practice of Krishna consciousness. So Srila Prabhupada's purport gives us a directly devotional understanding, and they are perfectly okay because that is the understanding that Krishna concludes with in the Bhagavad Gita when he says Sarvadharman Parityajya. But if we want to technically understand the Bhagavad Gita with respect to specific words and their meanings and their connotations, then we will have to look specifically at the verses and see what they mean in what the particular words mean in their context. Now, Srila Prabhupada is also aware of the flow of the Bhagavad Gita, but he has chosen a conscious strategy to give in every purport the ultimate conclusion of the philosophy, so as to make things easy for the readers to apply. If we read 2.72 in the Bhagavad Gita, the last purport of this particular chapter, you will find that Prabhupada says over there that in this chapter a glimpse of Bhakti Yoga has been given, and he says Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga have been described. So now, has only a glimpse been given by Srila Prabhupada in his purports? No, Srila Prabhupada has given a complete devotional understanding. For example, Savai Mana Krishna Padaravindan, engaging all the senses of Krishna's service, the Ambarish Maharaj verse from the 9th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada quotes that. So Prabhupada gives quite a detailed description of devotional service. So what does Prabhupada mean when he says that Krishna has given a hint of Bhakti Yoga? Actually, Vishwanath Chakra Thakur and other acharyas described that the hint of Bhakti Yoga in this section is 2.61, Matparaha. That is the only reference Krishna is making to himself in this section. So that is why Prabhupada is saying over here that if you look at the literal verse of the Bhagavad Gita, devotion is not directly expressed over there too much. It's only in one part of one line of one verse. So, of course, that Matparaha is at a critical position if we look at the overall flow. That is the essential way to control the senses that Krishna is recommending. But still, that is not the emphasis of the whole section if we just look at the words and their meanings or the literal flow of the Gita. So therefore, now if you look at the verses of the Gita and we want to understand that technical flow, then Sthitadhir Muni is Srila Prabhupada is describing basically, or rather Krishna is describing over here basically the characteristics of a person. Now the name Sthitadhir Muni itself does not convey whether the person is a jnani or a yogi or a bhakta. So, Srila Prabhupada explains how ultimately a Siddhi Muni has to be a bhakta. Because in the purport he says that there can be many munis who are speculators, but a muni who has given up all speculation, has come to the end of all speculation by understanding Krishna, Bahunam Janmanamante, Kyanavan Mamprapadhyate, such a person is a Siddhi Muni and such a person is a devotee. That is perfectly okay. And that's a very critical and valuable understanding for us. Now, at the same time, from the word Siddhi Muni itself, no process can be inferred. So, can this refer to Jnani or Yogi? If we look at the Bhagavad Gita, this section, Krishna is not so much describing the process to be followed as he is describing the goal to be achieved and the landmarks along the goal, the dangers along the goal. Along the path to the goal, rather. Landmarks along the path to the goal and the pitfalls along the path to the goal. So Krishna says, if one contemplates in sense obvious, one he falls down. If one lets the senses wander, one will fall down. Therefore one should control all the senses. So all these are describing the pitfalls and the pathways. And then Krishna gives the ultimate characteristic. For example, he says that in this this verse, what does it refer to? That a person is not affected by misery or pleasure. These verses can be seen as both descriptive and prescriptive. There is a Gita Daily article on this theme, that these verses, many in the Bhagavad Gita like this, in general can be seen either as descriptions of a self-realized soul, or they can also be seen as prescriptions for a soul seeking self-realization. So now this transition from description to prescription in this particular section is subtle and it is not clearly defined. But in general, most of the verses can be seen in both ways. Now sometimes some acharyas, for example in the 5th chapter, when there is a section like this, some acharyas say this verse refers to the sadhaka stage and this refers to siddha stage. But in other acharyas may give the explanation of this referring to siddha stage. So we can understand that they can refer to both. That means if we want to see advanced devotee, we can look for these characteristics in them. At the same time, to become advanced, we can also try to cultivate these characteristics in ourselves. So that's how they can refer to both. Now if you see here in the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna is describing yathato yapi kaunteya purushasya vipaschita indriyani pramathini haranti prasabham manaha. So here obviously when he's saying that the senses drag away a person, he's not referring to a siddha person. So he's referring to a sadhaka. He's referring to sadhaka. But then if you look a few verses earlier, the verse 2.55 as you have quoted, that prajhati yada kaman sarvan partha manogatan atmanyeva atmana tushta sthita prajna sthita ucchate. So this is Krishna describing, this is the sthita prajna. Now these terms, sthita prajna, Krishna does not use this word prajna after this section again in the Bhagavad Gita. So that's why we don't have any further reference to understand directly whether Krishna is referring to a particular sadhaka by sthita prajna. Is he referring to a jnani or a bhakta or a yogi? And in general, the Bhagavad Gita is inclusive. The Bhagavad Gita acknowledges other paths also, but then establishes how bhakti is the most recommended path. So the different acharyas have given different explanations. So Ramanacharya gives a technical 4-level explanation that this verse refers to a yogi at this level, this verse refers to a yogi at this level, this verse refers to a yogi at this level. That sort of technical analysis is very involved and it may be not really relevant for our application at our sadhaka stage to go into those intricacies. So generally speaking, from a broad generic point of view, this verse refers to this section is basically describing the spiritually advanced person, or you can say the spiritually realized person, and it is also prescribing the means to attain that spiritually advanced and realized stage. So how one gets there is not explicitly described by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita in this section. Matparha is the indication that he is hinting at bhakti, but he is not explicitly describing it over here. Now, how can the jnanis and yogis have a higher taste? Can they have? Again, Srila Prabhupada gives us the conclusive understanding that the only lasting higher taste is the higher taste of bhakti. At the same time, Srila Prabhupada has also translated Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami gives a hierarchy of various tastes, various levels of happiness. For example, earthly happiness, then heavenly happiness, then the happiness Satyaloka, in Tapaloka, Janaloka, Satyaloka, then the happiness in Brahmananda, like that. And similarly, there is a happiness, there are levels of happiness given in Taittiriya Upanishad, a very famous list which Shankaracharya quotes frequently. And that list ends in Brahmananda. Upanishads don't talk so much about bhakti. So in that hierarchy, Brahmananda is the highest. So sometimes the exact quantities are not so important over here, but sometimes we say that the earthly happiness is 100 times more, is 1000 times more. So we really can't quantify happiness from a mathematical point of view. So the essential message that we carry from these apparent quantifications of happiness is that this is higher than this and this is lower than this, that's all. So we have the higher taste, the supreme or the highest taste of bhakti, and then we have a hierarchy of tastes. Now all this hierarchy of tastes, apart from the taste of bhakti, Srila Prabhupada describes as a lower taste. And this is also done in our tradition, where, for example, our acharyas have described karma kana gyanda kana kevala vishera bhanda. So that means, although karma kana gyan kana are recommended in the scripture, they are because they keep the soul away from bhakti, so they are considered to be like poison. But are they actually poison? No, for a soul who doesn't have access to bhakti, they are means to progress. That's why they are given the scripture. But if they become the cause of distracting a person from bhakti, then they are like poison for the soul. So Srila Prabhupada is giving us the highway, or you could say the elevator. So once we have the elevator, we may not even notice, okay, this was the ground floor, and suddenly I reach on the 100th floor. But for one who doesn't have the elevator, then first floor, second floor, third floor, so many floors. And the 10th floor is surely higher than the ground floor. And the 50th floor is surely higher than the 10th floor. So Srila Prabhupada is given us the process of Krishna consciousness, where we start from the lower taste, whatever be the kind of lower taste you may be having. Generally, the lower taste is that we in Kali Yuga indulge in is very grossly animalistic. So we don't experience heavenly pleasures or tapaloka or satyaloka pleasures or anything like that. So whatever be that, so ground floor say we are at, and then we just enter into the lift and soup, it takes us up and we come to the 100th floor. So that's how Srila Prabhupada generally classifies higher taste and lower taste that way. But that is the scriptural basis for that, as I quoted from our Gaudiya Vishnu Acharyas. At the same time, there is another way of progressive, the staircase way of looking at it. So, and there is a hierarchy of progressively higher tastes. So the jnanis, by their philosophical or intellectual contemplation, they do get some kind of taste, and that taste is, if they can focus that much on that, and if they have that much of an intellectual nature, that sense is that taste is quite intoxicating. That's why Shankaracharya famously quotes Vedanta Vakyeshu Sadaravantaha. So he says that the sannyasi opinavanta khalu bhagyavanta. He says that actually relish the Vakya of Vedanta. So there is surely a higher taste as compared to the taste of sense gratification. The taste is higher in jnana, and similarly there is a higher taste in yoga, because there is some connection with the absolute truth. In jnana, one is connecting with the sat aspect of the absolute truth, one is connecting with Brahma Jyoti. And in the process of yoga, one is connecting with the sat chit aspect of the absolute truth, one is connecting with Paramatma. So these connections do give some level of higher taste. But because the natural emotional power of the soul is not utilized on these spiritual paths, so they become relatively difficult for most people. And that's why bhakti is considered more universal, more easy, more natural, because the soul is conscious, and consciousness essentially means desires and emotions. So these paths, they do offer a higher taste, but that higher taste is not the highest taste. And that higher taste is not necessarily accessible to everyone. For example, actually, if one studies Vedanta Sutra and one wants to relish Vedanta Vakyesh Dharamanta, there are no pastimes there. There are no reciprocations there. They are just extremely terse verses. And one has to shed gallons of intellectual sweat to actually understand what is going on. And only if somebody has that level of intellectual passion, then the person can realize Vedanta Sutra. But Shankaracharya is recommending that over there. So that recommendation, which is based on the scriptures itself, that one can seek Brahmananda. So Brahmananda is higher than, say, the sense gratification of the earthly planet or system that we live in. And similarly, Swargananda is also higher than the ananda of this world. But these higher pleasures are not the highest, and they are not always available to everyone. However, the path, the higher taste that we get from bhakti is the highest, and it can become accessible to everyone, because bhakti does not require the capacity to perform austerities or the capacity to intellectually analyze and process very complex concepts and words. It just requires that the emotions of the heart be offered to Krishna. So the higher taste for the jnanis is what comes from their jnana, from their neti, and thereby contemplation on Brahman. And for the yogis, the higher taste comes from, by their connection with the Paramatma. But these higher tastes are not are nowhere near as high as the taste of bhakti, and they are not accessible to everyone. So here, when we say yatato yapi kaunteya, the yogis and the jnanis, they may fall away if they fall away. But then, actually speaking, even devotees can fall away. So if even devotees who are intelligent and are seeking to advance, they may also fall away. Now we can say that is because they are not practicing Krishna consciousness properly. So the other transcendentalists will say that yes, those people fell away because they didn't practice the process properly. So the point is that Krishna consciousness offers us greater safety because it gives us the higher taste more easily and more universally, more naturally. But still, other processes also offer the higher taste. And then, if those who people practice those processes properly, they can move forward. But because those higher tastes are not available for everyone, because they are not at all easy, and because they are not natural, it is not natural for the soul to just be forever absorbed in intellectual analysis or be forever absorbed in bodily austerities. The soul's nature is to love and reciprocate love. So bhakti utilizes that nature, and that's why the taste here is easier to acquire. It is the highest taste, it is easier to acquire. But there are some kinds of higher taste in the other processes also. Thank you.